Well, we can talk about that in a minute. We are live now. So, yes. Welcome to episode number nine of Horror Mix's Happy to, YouTube Live Chats. Today we've got Mr. Scott Shermer, potentially best known for your work on Found, Headless, and Bad Man. Welcome. It's been about 2-3 years since we talked.
Yeah. And I had a lot of fun on the last one that we did. In fact, I think it's probably my favorite podcast I've ever done.
Oh, thank you. Well, thank you.
So credit to you guys for asking interesting questions and allowing conversations to take an organic course. It was just a really, it was much less torturous than a lot of Q&A sessions can be.
You know, and when Chris and I first came up with the whole idea for what we were going to do with the podcast, like that was one of the first things that we thought of was that it'd be nice to talk to creators about what they've been a fan of, because as you know, most of the interviews that you end up doing are things where you're talking about whatever it is that you're currently working on, which is what we'll end up probably doing today. But, you know, it's nice to have a break from that, which is, you know, once we stumbled on that idea, we were like, oh, this would be awesome. So glad you enjoyed it.
I mean, it's a necessary evil. You have to have like your answers to all the questions that people are most likely to ask.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But you know, it's like the poor Next Generation cast. I love Star Trek Next Generation. I will watch those cast members do any panel or conversation, and they get asked the same questions over and over again. And you can tell it kills them a little bit inside.
Yeah.
But they just smile through it, and they're good to the fans and everything. But yeah, and I'm not that I get asked questions nearly so often as them, but
right.
What else? Ask whatever the hell you want. It's cool. I have no life. I have nothing better to do. I am here for you.
Well,
I disagree. You have a very active and interesting life. As far as birds are concerned, I have to ask, how are Cushing and Charlie?
They are still sitting on eggs. It's been 6 weeks since Cushing laid the first one. She laid 7 of them. And after 4 weeks of the last egg being laid, she's supposed to lose interest. And she kind of is starting to lose interest. I took them away for a little while on Thursday, and they seemed okay. Since I knew I was going to be gone most of Friday and Saturday, I didn't want to take them away for good. But tomorrow, I think I'm going to take them away for good, and I think they're going to be all right.
Yeah.
They're infertile, if for anyone that doesn't know, that my two birds, my boy just turned 2, and he jumped right on her. She's like going to be 11 in May.
Oh, wow.
And she laid all these eggs. And I just assumed, since they'd been having so much bird sex lately, that they had to be fertile. So I bought bird like formula for little baby birds. And I bought like an incubator box and all this stuff. And then I candled the eggs, put a light behind them. And then I learned that they're infertile. So I could have saved myself some money if I'd candled a little earlier.
Yeah. Somewhat relate. I had a random chicken just walk into my yard one day, and I didn't think much of it at first, but after like a week, it just stuck around and kept walking around and digging in my yard. So I'm like, all right, well, I have a chicken now. I'm going to make a chicken coop. So I make a chicken coop.
Cool. Burned.
Never pays the chicken coop any attention, just keeps still digging up my yard. And then eventually just left. And today, when I was looking through the yard and some grass and stuff, I found a bunch of busted eggs. So she did lay me some eggs, apparently, just not in the very nice coop. Then.
Right.
Strange. A chicken took up residence in my yard a few years ago, and it was really wintry at that time, and it was going to go sub-zero. And I was worried about the chicken because everything outside was going to die once it went sub-wet. So I let her live in my utility room one night, and I put calls out all over social media to try and find this chicken a new home. And fortunately, somebody volunteered, because I'm too damn tender-hearted with animals, especially birds. I wasn't going to let that chicken die. So I'm glad somebody was able to take her in.
Yeah, it was somebody's yard bird.
Yeah, went back to their yard or to another yard.
Yeah, or escaped and is now gone.
I also love eating chickens. Quite a conflict.
And eggs.
Yes.
Eggs. Eggs are good for you.
Yeah. Excuse me. So, you know, I was looking through some of our notes from the previous interview that we did with you, and thinking about
it was a nice therapy session. I enjoyed it.
Good. No charge.
When you guys said, let's do it again, I was like, oh, good. It's been years since I've had therapy. I'm sure I did it.
Well, two of the topics that really came up strongly for you were, you know, we talked about how in early childhood development, there's always this phase where at the start of when a kid's born, usually they kind of cling to their parents, and then at a certain point, they decide to like identify as being different from their parents, and then they start doing this awkward teenager thing where they push away. And it was kind of interesting that you, it's not that you didn't do that, but it seemed like you really, family meant a lot to you, and that you really wanted to hold on to what you had, kind of thing. That was one big topic, and then the other big topic was facing your demons, which I think you know, particularly
you guys figured that one out. I was too stupid to know that. I've been making these movies all these years, and it never occurred to me that that was like the recurring theme in all of them.
Well, what was interesting is particularly how it related to the first topic I just mentioned, because you know, like you, I think we talked about in that call that you were on some level potentially concerned about how that was going to affect your relationship, because at least your mother, I think, was very not a
religious.
Yeah, I was going to say fundamentalist, but more than just devout. Let's put it that way. The better word. And there was some concern.
Well, it wasn't just religion. It was also culture. Just living in southern Indiana back then, you really couldn't stray far from the course everyone had determined for you.
I remember you telling us a story about how, like, she decided to leave the church that she was a member of, and, like, you guys had to hide in a closet because they were, like, knocking on the doors and peeking in the windows. That's, to me, that's more than just being devout. That's a cult.
Yeah, there's a reason why evil preachers get to me.
Yeah.
In movies, in horror movies.
Yeah.
It comes to me, honestly.
So the question I wanted to ask is, I guess now as a follow-up, a couple of years later, have you seen that show up in any of your own work since then, or have you seen it show up in anything that has really stood out to you of the media you've consumed since then?
The religious stuff?
Either of those topics. Family.
I mean, the family thing's all... I've always known that that's what I liked, and... I don't like to talk crap about my family because the truth is I think I won the parent lottery. I think my parents are, especially after I grew up and met a lot of adult friends and got to know what kind of stories they had about their growing up and their families and everything, I think I would not trade mine for the world. I love the ones I got. But I think on some level, everybody wants their family to be more like what they see on the sitcoms on television if you grew up in the 70s and 80s anyway. It just seemed more fun, more loving, more caring.
Why doesn't my family have a laugh track?
Yeah, I know. But less real, very important.
Yeah.
But so family and the idea of surrogate family have always been something I've liked in movies and stories. I mean, I just saw Project Hail Mary, and that's about a human being becoming really close, intimate, soul companion friends with like a pile of rocks.
Okay.
A rock alien, and yes.
But it's still an alien presence. Yeah, I saw your review of it earlier. Apparently.
Although he does get a voice,
and
yeah, he gets a voice. Doesn't have a face. Kind of has an asshole, and has a lot of personality.
Okay, so it really is just a rock.
It's just a bunch of rocks.
I love the fact that assholes have come up on both of our conversations.
I don't know if you remember this. 5 minutes, shit, and assholes are going to come up.
Chris was the one that brought it up. He talk about standing over a mirror. Anyway.
I think I do remember that. I think that was one of my like just random statements of, hey,
just
you like, ever stand in front of a mirror and look at your own asshole?
The whole conversation just stopped.
I remember when I was getting my first hemorrhoid, I had to try and do that, and it was a lot harder to see your own asshole than you would think.
Yeah, right? You would think it'd be easy.
Very hard. So then I ended up having to show it to like three different doctors.
Oh, and, well, doctors,
ended
okay.
Up in having a hemorrhoidectomy, which was the weirdest thing to have to tell people. It's like, why aren't you going to be at work for a week? I think I was gone for maybe 2 weeks because it takes a long time to heal. And when your asshole is like fucked up and healing.
Especially back there, because it can get infected really
bad. You kind of have to sit special, and like every time you go to the bathroom, it's a deal.
Like, I'm surprised.
It burns it, when you poop.
Yeah, no kidding. I'm actually surprised you had that done, because from what I've read, you know, it is, because of how dangerous it is, because of how infected it could get. So it must have been a pretty bad situation for you.
Well, one of the three doctors that I saw, the first two said it was a skin tag and that I shouldn't be worried. But then the third's like, nope, that's the biggest hemorrhoid I've ever seen. So I'm like, well, shit, that sounds like something we should get rid of. And so we did. I understand,
like, how one can be mistaken for the other, but when
you know what? That's
the biggest hemorrhoid I've ever seen. Like, how do you mistake that for a skin tag?
Right.
Doctors are stupid these days. I really have no faith in doctors. Me. Like, AI's coming, and I'm ambivalent about it at best. But I do think I would trust AI more than almost any doctor at this point. So
no, well, don't worry, because you know, your current doctors, when you're old enough to need you know, elderly care, are currently learning things through ChatGPT. So
oh, for sure,
the cycle will continue, and we're doomed.
Let's just enjoy the slide into doom.
Yeah. I think to the wave. I think AI is probably going to be better than I'm going to say this. So the things that are most common the doctors are seeing on a regular basis, you know, they might be pretty good at that, but AI is probably going to really shine in the edge cases, you know.
The what? Oh, the edge cases?
Yeah, things where you only see it like, you know, one out of every million, you know, one out of every
right.
Oh, okay. Yep. I was going to ask, what does AI care about people that just really try to masturbate as long as they can? I mean, that's just...
Yeah, why does it care? But I did see a story about a woman who said AI caught her cancer because it was just a sliver of a sign that humans wouldn't have caught. So that's good.
Okay, yeah, let's more of that, please.
We'll claim to the good.
I'm taking my tech job and just putting stupid AI chat things into every single thing. Can we just maybe use it for more things like medical, medicine, and science?
Dude, we're experimenting with AI at where I work, doing audiobooks. They're trying to find a way to have the authors of books who want to narrate their own books only have to narrate a couple of paragraphs, and then AI will extrapolate all the sounds necessary to apply that to their whole book without them actually having to read it in real time. Crazy. And in the experiment that I did, I'm like listening, and the AI is reading along, and then all of a sudden it just starts speaking gibberish, and it starts like rhyming and doing a whole lot of alliteration, and it was like it was having a fit. It was hilarious. I wish I could play it for you, because if you heard it, you'd bust a gut.
Were you actually, like,
wow, where does this come from?
Were you getting to read along with what it was supposed to be reading?
It went way off course. It wasn't at all reading. It was absolute gibberish.
The reason I ask is because if you weren't, then how do you know that that's not what the author wrote?
Oh, it's not. Oh, I knew what was written. It was not what was written.
Okay, so theory,
pretty funny.
Maybe it was like an AI machine learning void comp test where it does do things like just things that rhyme, things that are alliteration, things that end in an N, things that end in a P, and it just like goes through all those examples to learn how to pronounce the voice that it's working with. Like, it doesn't make sense.
Your guess is as good as mine.
Grammatically, but...
I thought maybe it was a situation like they need all these data farms to, like, process everything AI is doing. What if it was running out of room?
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know. Maybe. Just guessing. I guess
they'll just have to build another one in a national park somewhere that really needs a data center.
They're going
to
be everywhere.
Yep.
Gonna be like,
sorry, I'm gonna take us way off course every question probably.
That's okay. We were talking, I got the backtrack with one. Data centers, AI, doctors, hemorrhoids, buttholes. Oh, movies. Before that we were talking about
Hail
movies.
Mary.
Hail Mary. Which rocks.
Yeah.
It sounded to me like
certain like family.
The whole like conversation was a positive. Fucking Hail Mary.
Yeah, I like Circuit Family stories a lot, and religion.
I like horror movies like Texas Chainsaw and, you know, House of Thousand Corpses. Those are fun.
I love those movies, but not for the same reasons.
You have a different definition of family.
Yeah, and I don't know. Every time I see a movie, I'm like, why do I like this? Especially if it's a movie that I know was a bomb or critically reviled. I'm like, why do I like this and no one does? So I've been asking those kinds of questions for as long as I can remember to try and like figure out how to make the best movies, you know?
Yeah.
And also just to know who I am better. And sometimes you still get surprised at 52. You'll never stop learning about yourself, I guess. That's why I'm here, man, for you guys to like probe and let's find something else out that I don't know.
So how did that make you
who am I? Yeah, why am I here?
Speaking of therapists and movies, have you seen If I Had Legs, I'd Kick You? And if so, what was your take on it?
Is that Jesse Buckley?
I believe so. It's starring Rose Byrne.
Oh, no, it's Rose Byrne. Then. No, I haven't seen it, but I like her.
She's so good.
So it's something I'll probably eventually see.
I do recommend.
I'm very slow to see newer stuff.
I'm such a huge collection.
Oh, yeah.
I think I'm almost about to have 1,000 movies on my shelf. There are people who have many more.
And you've been getting rid of some.
I did for a while. I'm trying to only get the ones that I like a lot or love or that are just so weird that I can't stop watching them. So I've got some bad movies in there, but not too many of them. But, yeah.
Like Zombie Ass and Dick Shark.
No, I don't have those. The worst... I've got like Sasquatch, The Legend of Bigfoot from the 70s on there. Mm-hmm. That's not a great movie, but it's the first horror movie I ever saw, so I have that nostalgia for it.
Yeah.
God. Poseidon from 2005, the remake. I don't know. Oh. Sometimes the heart wants what a Scarlet Letter from 1995 with Demi Moore. Mm-hmm. I mean, some of these movies are fairly indefensible, but... If you put pretty people in pretty costumes and pretty scenery and there's pretty music, there's a part of me that just doesn't give a shit what the movie's about or how well it's done otherwise. If it's just, if it looks pretty and it sounds pretty, I'm like, I could be a sucker for that sometimes, I admit.
So like anything by Tor Simpson?
I do like The Fall. Mm-hmm. I liked it a little more than The Cell. I liked The Cell, just not a lot.
Yeah, no.
So I appreciate his style, but I did want more substance in his.
Yeah, the Fall definitely has more substance.
Yeah,
it's like if a Dolly painting were a movie.
Yeah, and those two characters were really sweet, Lee Pace and that little girl. I just got that on. I don't know if it was 4K or a new Blu-ray, but I haven't seen it since it came out in theaters. So that's one of the ones I'm looking forward to rewatching.
Yeah, that belongs on 4K.
That actually came up during our very first interview.
Did it?
Our very first guest, yes. She couldn't remember the name of the movie, and you ended up guessing it based off of her just talking about it being in a desert, and picking up on it. He used the same desert in a lot of different films, and then you got talking about the little girl and how a lot of her lines were ad-libbed and all that stuff.
Yeah, that was one of my favorite parts about the BTS about that movie. They explained that the little girl, like, most of her lines were just ad-lib because she was so young and just a very free spirit and playful little kid. So it was hard to teach her lines, but she was so good at just being a kid that they were like, you know what, fuck it. Let her run with it. Your thing you're going to say in this scene is this. Go. Do.
Yeah, right. Yeah. That's, I mean, I'm not trying to relate myself to anyone else, but that's kind of how I tried to approach working with Gavin Brown on Found, was to take the pressure off him trying to memorize the words in the script so much, like, just let that go. You know what he's supposed to say. Mm-hmm. Just put it in your own words. Just kind of, let's just role play. You've read the scene. You know what it's about. You know kind of what they're saying. You don't have to say it exactly that way. Mm-hmm. Just role play with the other actor and see what happens. Don't get stressed about it. And he did a great job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he did.
Tooted my own horn. Yeah.
I was going to say, speaking of some of your movies, Chris watched one today.
Yeah, I finally got around to watching Harvest Lake.
I
got a copy of it like long ago when you were fundraising it, and I had never actually sat down and watched it. And those people fuck in the woods.
Yeah, they do. In fact, they fuck the woods.
They do.
Yeah. We like that one a lot. Whenever Brian and I look back, it's usually our favorite that we worked on together.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I still like Found a little more, and I might like Headless a little more, but Harvest Lake is way up there. And I don't think it's people's favorites in general. I think the last time I looked on IMDb, it had a pretty low rating compared to some of the other. I mean, a lot of my movies have low ratings, but I think it had a lower than usual rating. But I really like it. We're pretty proud of that one. We wish that some of the effects towards the end could have been a little bit more magnificent. But yeah, for what Arthur and his team had to work with, like no money, like they did a gangbusters job delivering the effects on that and many other movies.
Yeah, I mean, for a low budget film, the tentacle was very well done.
Yeah, they did a good tentacle. That was pretty good. And those aren't easy to do either, I don't think.
No, they're not. Like, they're not easy to do and make them look good without CG or a lot of money. So
yeah,
hold on.
When we're going, I was going through your notes from our previous call. I saw that you were the one that had suggested we talk to Arthur, and I'd completely forgotten about that until I saw that note. We did end up talking to him too.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure I listened to it, but it's been a while.
Yeah,
2 or 3 years.
You interviewed Shane also. I listened to that one, I think.
Yep. Yes, we did. Yep.
Mm-hmm. But you haven't talked to Brian yet.
We have not talked to Brian or Ellie yet. Yeah, I think we were trying to talk to Ellie.
If you ever want to talk to them, just send me a message, and I'll like let them know, hey, these guys are awesome. Fucking talk to them. You talk to other people. What's wrong with these guys? What'd they do to you? Show me on the doll where Steve and Chris touched you.
That actually, that might be half accurate. They did show up at Spooky Empire in Florida 1 year, and I don't know. I got blackout drunk at one point. Latter parts of the evening. I do remember hanging out at the pool with Brian and Ellie, and there were other friends there too, so hopefully they kept me in check. But that was about like the last thing I remember the evening was hanging out at the pool with them, and then hotel room bed. Well, at least I made it here.
Fuck. No telling what happened. If you touched Ellie's butthole, you'll never get her back.
Oh, actually,
that's where she draws the line.
I don't get that rambunctious, but I'm blackout drunk. Well, not that.
Well, actually, we did talk to her, and the problem with getting her on at the time was that the solution that we use for recording is Zencastr. And they don't allow recording from cell phones, only computer. Right. And so she needed something that we could record from a phone. And we just never got around to finding a good solution for that. So maybe we can.
Well, Brian has a desktop computer. I was about to say,
it's been 4 years. Do they have a computer yet?
They do.
Okay.
So
you can probably circle back and check. Yeah.
Ellie, if you don't want to do a podcast with these guys for good reason I don't know about, please let me know. Because otherwise,
just say I don't want to.
I'm peer pressuring you into it. We need to find out what makes Ellie Church tick.
Yes.
We'll see.
And Brian.
What's Brian's last name? I don't think of
Williams.
Oh, yeah. You know what? Yeah, send me his information because that's such a common name that I'll probably have a hard time finding him.
Yeah, Brian K. Williams is what he goes by, just so people don't think he's the... And in fact, I looked on one of our movies, our latest movie, Gush, went up on Fandango now, and I went there to look, and it's got all of our credits, and it's got pictures wherever it could draw a picture, and since we're all nobodies, it didn't draw pictures for any of us, but for Brian, it has the newscaster, Brian Williams, his photo.
Okay.
That's that happens sometimes.
I know that it does.
Actually, I do have him written down here, so I will need to make a note to reach out to him.
He's got some stories about growing up in a cult, too. We had that in common, yeah.
Did he also grow up in Indiana?
Yep.
Okay. Yeah.
South Central, not too far from where I grew up.
Paula Diaz is out there, too, right now. Somewhere out there. Horror author that we interviewed and I met at StokerCon. I wonder if she'll be out at StokerCon this June, July? June, I think.
June.
I'll have to double check with her.
I just went to Horror Hound, got some autographs from David Arquette and Jamie Kennedy, Joe Dante, and Galen Ross from Dawn of the Dead. That was my haul this time. I would have gotten a few more, but I just couldn't stand being around crowds and on my feet any longer.
Yeah.
So it
There's
was
a lot
fun,
of
though.
Walking cons.
Well, just standing and waiting in lines, and if you're middle aged and overweight, that's just not fun.
No. Yeah. It's an unfortunate necessity when going to cons, especially if you want autographs these days. It's like, all right, today's gonna be autograph day. I'm going to spend today in line.
Yep.
Several lines.
I don't know if it was the most recent one or the one before that, but I also went to Horror Hound not too long ago, and I think it was the one that Clive was at. I think that was on the that way we got him to autograph the shirt that we donated to Scares the Care. I think that was at Horror Hound.
I know he's been to some Horror Hounds. I've always missed him, though, when he went. And he was one that I would like to have an autograph from, because I don't know if we talked about him the last time or not, but he was the author that I latched onto in high school.
Yeah. Did we talk about him?
We might have. I don't remember. It wouldn't surprise me.
Seems like we would have.
Yeah.
I feel like we started from my entrance into the world from my mother's womb and and went through trick-or-treating and grade school and then high school and...
Let's see, for teen years, we talked about AP Literature, Gremlins, wow, Buffy the Vampire Buffy the Vampire, no, BTTF, what was that?
We gotta start having people, like, actually lay down
Back to the Future.
Back to the Future. Silverhawks, Thundercats, The Abyss, Dune.
Silverhawks.
Those were all touchstones.
I don't see anything. Clive, maybe it was down
in
the...
Well, in high school, there was a little magazine that my teachers would pass out to us. I can't remember what it was called. I think it was called just Writing. And Clive Barker wrote, and it seems weird that a horror author like Clive Barker would be asked to write an article inspiring high schoolers to write something, but he did. And there's a picture of him, and I thought he was attractive, at least back then, for one thing. And I knew he made some horror movies, and then I didn't think anything of it. But pretty soon after that, I was watching TV late one night, and a Dr. Ruth was on, and she had an episode talking about horror with Wes Craven, who was live in the audience, and Clive Barker was there on a TV live. And I was like, he sounds really interesting. And the discussion that they were having about horror and why people liked it was, and you can find this on YouTube if you want to look for it. It's out there. I've seen it. That made me want to go, well, I need to read one of his books. So I started with The Damnation Game, and then I went to Weave World. And I think I started The Great and Secret Show, but didn't finish it. And I have Cabal, and I've never read it. And it's one of those things that one of these days I'm going to read it. Because I love Nightbreed, but as flawed as it is, and it is quite flawed, I think. I'd love to remake that one, but that'll never happen.
You never say never. No, funny, when you said that he was included in this... magazine that you got from school, my first thought was like, did they do any research into any of the stuff?
It's weird, right? Yeah, it's weird.
Yeah, it was back in the day when it was fun. It was fine. Look, Wes Craven, he did that horror, that Freddie Mercury movie or whatever. You know, it's fine. Just put it in the book.
Well, I think even Wes Craven, they would find him less disturbing than some of Clive Barker's writing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, like, because we can have as much violence as you want, but S&M and sex, no, none of that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The thing from Clive Barker's writing I remember the most, because my memory sucks and I don't remember a lot, but in, I think it's Weave World, there's this scene where the protagonist is like essentially essayed by this supernatural character called, they call her the Magdalene, and it was written so creepily and seductively that it was quite disturbing, and I just, that was in my... The directions for how to find that were in my high school little magazine.
What?
So you never know. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think he wrote some kids' books too, so it balances out.
He did, actually.
That was not one of them.
Shit, no.
Wasn't there an animated series that was written by Clive Barker?
I know he was working on one, but I don't know if it ever came to fruition.
Yeah.
It does ring a bell.
He kind of hit a brick wall in like the late 90s and 2000s, and I'm sure you guys know a little about Clive's rocky couple of decades. But we'll always have what we have, and Hellraiser's pretty awesome, and I adore Nightbreed, warts and all.
Have you
the
seen
Thief
the,
of Always?
Not the director's edition. What's the special edition of Nightbreed where it's like all...
I think they call it a director's cut. There's also a Cabal cut. The Cabal cut is like a whole bunch of stuff thrown in, everything they could find. The director's cut is a little more refined and better. I like watching the director's cut because it's got all the material that was missing, especially towards the end. I really like some of the stuff at the end and towards the beginning. But what bothers me about it is that the music gets repurposed because they couldn't afford to have Clive Barker come write more music, so they replay some cues. And I guess I'm a little bit like Rain Man with that. I don't like when music gets repurposed. It's like, wait, that track goes with that scene. I don't want to see it with this one. And it doesn't really fit quite right. So I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, you can make exceptions and for certain things, like reusing a theme. If a character's in a certain scene from, you know, and this is their theme, but completely just using something verbatim is be a little weird.
Like Wonder Woman, where they play that same music every time she enters. Wonder Woman! That's the music. It's just like that. Wonder Woman!
I remember watching her in the 70s.
God, yeah. That was a long time ago.
Linda Carter. I think my mom kind of looked like Linda Carter.
Very attractive lady. The Thief of Always is the book about a 10-year-old that Clive wrote. It's still got some kind of horrific element in that. Plot concerns a 10-year-old boy who journeys to a magical house only to discover its master uses the home to attract children and steal their youth to ensure his own immortality.
That sounds wonderful.
I mean, it's like what's the word I'm looking for? Not fairy tale. What's like Grimm's? I guess fairy tale is the word, but it's like more of a old world fairy tale.
Yeah,
I found the cartoon he did. It's called Night of the Zoopocalypse. Hmm.
You know, Midnight Meat Train. What'd you guys think of the movie of that?
I have not seen it. Have you, Chris?
I loved it too.
It was really good. I think
I gave it a 9 out of 10. I was shocked how good it was.
Bradley Cooper's character is annoyingly stupid at times, but the character is played well. So, yeah. Yeah, I'd say like...
The director, man, I just thought it had a vibe that was different enough from anything else I'd ever seen. It was like in a city, so it had a very, you know, urban kind of feel to it, but it was like a polished, shiny... I don't know. It felt like the whole movie took place inside of a meat locker, but like a really nice neon meat locker. I don't know. I'm talking about like my feelings about it.
Yeah. The tone that
it had a great vibe.
The overall, you know, color palette, lighting, the score. It kind of reminded me a little bit of Creep, not the Mark Duplass Creep, but the
Subway.
Yes.
Creep movie. I vaguely remember that one. I also like Clive Barker because in that story, Meat Train, and also in Nightbreed, I can't remember in what else, there's a male protagonist who becomes incapacitated at some point in Act 2 or 3, and his girlfriend or his significant female other is at that time called upon to be the hero for a short time to like get him back on his feet. So it's really, I like that, and I don't see it that often. You usually either get a protagonist through the whole thing or not. And this was like one, and then it hands off. I don't know. It's just unique that he would take that approach.
Yeah.
And it's like it makes. It's
a damsel in distress. You know, it's the.
It just appealed to me immensely for some reason that he would do that, especially in Nightbreed. For some reason, it really gets to me that Anne Bobby's character has to really help him out in a few places. And I don't think Hollywood traditional stories would do that too much. The notes coming back from the studio would be, he seems weak, or the actors wanting to play the characters would say, he seems weak, he doesn't have agency when it matters the most. Well, it's like, well, then it's like real life. There are times when we hit a wall and we need help.
Yeah.
We need a lift up, and why not let it be from a woman? I just thought that was cool. It's kind of maybe, I don't know. I've talked too much about it, but that's one of the things I liked about Clive Barker was the way it was male protagonists, which I do enjoy because I'm male, and if you want to get straight to my heart, for better and for worse, if the character is male, I do often relate with them a little quicker. I still love movies like Thelma and Louise and Steel Magnolias, but in that one, the male was not perfect. He wasn't good enough to be the hero the whole time, and I think that's like real life. That's real life, and it's giving the girlfriends and the wives the credit they deserve too for like working behind the scenes to help him get there to that final destination. I don't know.
Yeah,
I'm just always trying to make Nightbreed seem better because there's so many people who are like, that movie's freaking stupid. And I'm like, I know why you say that, but I love it.
The guy has runes cut into his face. They just, yeah, they appear. They're cuts that appear in his face. How cool is that? What?
That's just one of many cool pebbles on a vast beach of coolness.
Yeah.
Like, the fact that they think that movie had more people in prosthetic makeup at one time than any other movie ever made,
I believe,
is pretty cool.
Yeah, because there's like a tracking shot, I think. It's maybe a continuous shot where they're going through Midian and they're going, yeah, down the hall and they show all the different ones. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, before it came out, I saw it referred to as the Citizen Kane of horror movies. and I think it had the potential to be that, mm-hmm, if the studio hadn't interfered as much as they did. And also, I'm not sure Clive Barker had the chops at that time, mm-hmm, to pull it all off. Because the action in Nightbreed is probably one of the weakest parts of it. It's just kind of a mess. It needs a little more finesse and style and more choreography, I think. But yeah. I still love that movie. A lot of times, if I can see where the movie was headed and I like the aim, it compensates a lot for lapses in execution. Mm-hmm. But I noticed a lot of people don't have that same kind of forgiveness. If it looks terrible, they just hate it.
There's also something to be said about the fact that you've done this for a living too, so you can understand a bit more about, you know, what goes into it and sometimes why choices.
Good intentions.
Not only
maybe good intentions, good intentions.
Understanding about what choices go into, you know, what goes in or what gets left out or why. Because I can't remember who it was that we were talking to. I want to say it was Jeremiah Rosario, who had been a movie reviewer and then did a short film about Catsick Blues called Catsick Blues, Sick Blues. And I remember him saying something along the lines of that, you know, once he had gone through that process, it kind of opened his eyes to certain things, particularly having to have done it on a small budget, that, you know, made him a little more amenable to seeing things in other films that maybe he would have been harsher on in the past.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like you say, it's the auteur eye, you know, once you've actually done the thing yourself, then you,
a little more forgiving,
bit more forgiving, you have a little bit more appreciation. You have personal experience with it all, really.
Yeah. I try to be forgiving where special effects are concerned, because when you go back in time, of course, it's not going to match what we can do today. So it's always a bonus if that part of the movie's great. But the story and the acting, that's something you can judge all throughout the last century, I think.
Yeah. I mean, talent is still talent.
And directing. Although with directing, you never know if it was the director or not.
Yeah.
You know? Because there are a lot of directors out there who really don't direct that much.
Really? Like, ghost directing, is that common?
They're not ghost directing. Lost Boys. I love The Lost Boys. Who doesn't love The Lost Boys? It's fucking cool. Yeah. But I've come to learn that Joel Schumacher styled that movie. He cast it. He did direct it. I'm not trying to say he didn't, but he pretty much let the cinematographer determine the shots and how the scenes were staged. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's directing. That's like a big part of directing.
Yeah. That's why you do
so. And in my mind, The Lost Boys is directed by Joel Schumacher and Michael Chapman now.
Okay.
Now that I know that.
There was some movie, because I'd been doing research for a horror trivia game, and I can't remember what movie it was, but like the first movie, I think, where I want to say it was Dario Argento. Don't quote me on this, but I think it was Dario Argento, where like the first director credit that he had was one of those situations where he was a cinematographer on somebody's film, and that director there's varying stories. Some people say he kind of got kicked off of it. Other people say that he intentionally chose to step back so that Dario could kind of take over and let this be his directorial thing. But, you know,
it's a nice story if it's true.
Yeah.
If it's true.
Speaking of directors, I had to go pull this up because it was bugging me. Speaking of that research I was doing for this trivia game, so the director for Midnight Meat Train is, I'm going to butcher this name, Ryuhi Kitamura. And it was bugging me because I remember it was a name who I had not heard before. But as part of what I was doing is I was also pulling up other, trying to go through everybody, not everybody, but a lot of the bigger names that were associated with each movie that we're researching to see what else they had done so that I could put more information about. Mm-hmm. So we're asking about this movie. Here's an answer. And then, oh, by the way, he's also worked on this other stuff. And I was surprised he did that. More recently, he's done The Price We Pay with Emile Hirsch and Stephen Dorff.
I haven't seen either of those that you just mentioned, but I should put them on my radar.
And I see he did a movie in
2020. I like Emile Hirsch a lot.
Called Labyrinth. It's not a reboot of Labyrinth yet. Thank God.
Nightmare Cinema. Hellgate.
There's a terrible movie called Hellgate. I'm sure it's a different one.
2011.
When I watched Meat Train in my home theater, the Schirmer Cinema, I've got surround sound. It just looked and sounded spectacular. Not all surround sound movies sound the same. Some of them, a lot of them, are actually pretty weak.
Yeah.
But if you're into surround sound in the home theater experience, the standard Blu-ray that's out there for Midnight Meat Train sounds awesome in surround sound.
Cool. Check it out.
I remember the first time I got surround sound set up at my house. It was back when I was living in Florida.
It's a different experience, isn't it?
Well, but funny story. So I forget. It was one of the X-Men movies that I was watching, Wolverine or something like that. And the way my house was set up at that time, I had my couch with the window, front windows behind me, and then TV in front of me. And there's a scene in the movie where somebody knocks on the door, and it's but it's behind you. And I was like, what the fuck? Yeah. Scared the shit out of me.
What? One of my favorite surround sound experiences is when I watch Willow, which is one of my favorite little comfort movies. So I watch it like once a year. There's a scene at Tirith Sleen when the two-headed dragon breathes fire towards the camera.
It's my favorite part.
You hear the fire coming out of the dragon's mouth in the front of the room, and then you hear it hit the back of the room.
Hmm. Okay, that's awesome.
And cool. I was like, ooh!
Willow. Light and magic, I think?
The sound on Willow is, for a home theater, like, is amazing. You would think that about Lucasfilm always, but I've watched the 4Ks of the Indiana Jones films, and their sound is good, but it's not nearly as immersive and just present in all the speakers like Willow is. So if you're into home theater surround sound, check out Willow. And you don't even have to get the new 4K. You can watch the old Blu-ray. The 5.1 on that Blu-ray is
engineered that well back then.
One of the most immersive soundtracks I've heard. I love it. It's a cinematic experience. I'm pretty sure Ben Burtt probably did it. I don't know for sure. I can't remember.
John Williams?
No, James Horner did the score. I love the score. As derivative as I know it is of several other things, I love how it all comes together. And did you know that the score to Willow was the most expensive film score ever recorded at that time?
Did not know that.
The orchestra was so big, and he had so many exotic instruments come in that very few people in the world even knew how to play.
Hmm. Yeah.
And it was a big deal, the score for Willow.
Hmm. Cool.
If I do say so myself, I'm a huge fan.
Rightly so. It is a great film.
I don't even know if it's a great film. I just fucking love it.
Yeah, it's
when I watch it today, I can see why people don't like it. It's not deep.
No.
It doesn't quite ring on an archetypal level the way Star Wars does.
And it is a little derivative and cliche, but it's just well made.
Yeah.
It's just a good time. It's good characters.
I think it's like I said earlier. If you put pretty people in it, and that has a pretty cast... And if you have pretty scenery and pretty music and pretty costumes and it's just moderately entertaining, I'll fucking love it. And Willow just hits that spot.
Agreed.
Something about the appearances.
Well, Val Kilmer's fucking hot. Joanne Whalley's pretty fucking gorgeous, too.
Joanne Whalley's the one who played Saoirse?
Saoirse, yeah. Saoirse's got a real classic kind of old-fashioned beauty to her. They're the prettiest ones. And I love Jean Marsh as Queen Bamorda. I wish she was in the movie more. And just the look of General Kale's mask. I love that mask. If anyone ever makes a replica of that mask that looks any good at all, I'm sure I can find the $500 or $600 to pay for it. Because
it's got to be functional with the flip down and everything.
I don't even care if it flips down. That's just a bonus. I love General Kale's mask in Willow. I'm shallow that way. I just
Chris has a 3D printer.
Somebody's bound to get around to it, I imagine. I did get Bubo the Owl finally. I'd always wanted a nice. Bubo the Owl from Clash of the Titans since I was a little kid. I think it's resin, but it's like finished in such a way that you couldn't tell from just looking at it. I think it was like $200 or $300, and I decided, you know what, I'm splurging. I'm getting this damn thing because I've wanted it my whole damn life. And it's beautiful. It came with gloves so that when you touch it, you won't leave oil on it.
Nice.
I love my Bubo.
Well, you like birds in general, so that's a bonus.
Yeah. That tracks.
It tracks. I love that whole movie, too, Clash of the Titans.
It was a good movie, but Bubo was definitely the best thing about that movie.
Arguably, yeah. Yeah, there were a lot of best things about that movie.
I liked when Sam Worthington yelled.
Not that one. Harry Hamlin.
The other thing that I remember about that
is 1981 Clash of the Titans.
Oh, I've never seen
that. We have a generational issue.
Like a half generation. I was born in that year.
You were born.
I was alive when it was made. Barely. Yeah.
I don't remember whether or not this came up in our call, but I know I've shared this on the podcast multiple times where at the time when that came out, it's one of two movies that I remember seeing at a drive-thru at the same time, actually, because the way it worked out was when I was living in Milwaukee, it was me, my dad, my stepmother, and my sister, my older of the two sisters. She was still younger than me. I was the oldest, but this drive-in that we went to in Milwaukee, they were set up such that the adults would have one movie and then you'd have your car facing that way, and then there was another screen behind the car that the kids could look out the back window and see a different movie. And so so on the adult movie was Clash of the Titans and the kids movie was Muppets Take Manhattan. And I remember
the sound work though. Do you have a different speaker in each window,
basically, yeah. It was a hatchback that we had, and you could also put the back seat down, so it was like a flat surface. And so we were laying on that back deck, looking out the back window. And I remember just kind of like, you know how you like when you flip channels, I would be watching this movie, and then that get boring, so go back and watch this one, and then get boring, and we watch this one. But yeah,
that's unique. I've never heard of that being anywhere else.
Yeah. But
that's... when I saw Clash of the Titans, it was a double feature on the biggest screens in the tri-state area at that time. The Showcase Cinemas in Louisville, Kentucky had the biggest screen in three states. And we watched Superman 2 and Clash of the Titans the same day. Back then, before Mom started joining the workforce, we could do things like that.
Remember, was one or two the one with Zod?
He's in both technically, but he's featured heavily in two.
Yeah.
He's got one scene in the first one at the beginning.
At the beginning, or that was the end?
Yep. Mm. He's sentenced to the Phantom Zone at the beginning of the first movie before the main story starts.
Okay. It's been
a long time since
I saw that one.
Yeah.
Superman 2, people say, is their favorite, but if you go back and watch that first one, it's leaps and bounds better than the second one.
I can't even remember. What's the general story from the first one? I don't even remember it.
Just see it again. It's the origin story, basically.
Okay.
Well, just see it again. Christopher Reeve and Margot Kidder are phenomenal. Superman the movie is brilliant. I wish more people would watch it. I think a lot of people today just forget about it because it looks so old compared to what today's more modern superhero movies look like. But Richard Donner movie has more heart and is just more entertaining than any of the other DC movies they've made since.
I would say that that's probably also another reason why it gets overlooked too, is because, as you say, they had heart. They were well cast together, but that's the word I'm looking for.
You don't think people want that anymore?
Well,
yeah,
that kind of it was very leave it to Beaver. You know what I'm saying? Like it was
a little, yeah. I ask you what you're saying. If you're anathema to that, then yeah, you're not gonna like it. But man, sure. I love that shit. So
perfect example. It's like when you know I had never actually watched the original Addams Family, and when I finally watched it, I was like, this is like gothic Dick Van Dyke. it's got that feel. Like you said, like the Leave It to Beaver feel.
Yeah. Mm. Well,
which is just a
funny, we are so funny you should say that. Cheated. Funny you should say that, though, because that was part of what the Addams Family show was about. It was that a response to the Leave It to Beaver to say, we know, because there was a lot of people, there were a lot of people who were jaded because they knew that Leave It to Beaver and the Andy Griffith show, like they were like, that's bullshit. You know, that's not how life really is. And
yeah, in real life, there are people that walk around looking like vampires, and they hurt people for fun and drink poison. That's realistic.
Well,
no, yes. I see what you're saying. They wanted something as an antithesis or like a push in the other direction from that.
Well, it was counterculture, you know.
Yeah, it was counterculture. That's the term.
Same thing with
counterculture decade.
Yeah, same thing with
the sequel. The feature film sequel, Addams Family Values, is funny.
Yeah, it is.
I could take or leave the original feature film, but the sequel, I think, is far funnier. I love that. Yeah. Joan Cusack, back in her prime, went a long way.
I mean, I do like the Thanksgiving play in the original. Yes.
But we cannot break bread with you. Yeah, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, I made Chris watch it.
So far we've answered one question?
I think so. and we got 3 minutes left.
Right.
So,
yeah,
what's your favorite type of peanut butter?
I'm not a huge fan of peanut butter raw, but I like it in, like, cookies.
Okay.
So, I don't know what brand they put in cookies. And right now I'm not eating too many cookies because I'm trying to lose some weight. And I've lost 6 pounds in 3 weeks, so I'm very optimistic that I can keep it up. So nice. Pray for me that I will be half the size I am now in like a year, year and a half.
Good luck.
I'm sending you thoughts and prayers and cookies.
Ooh. And no cookies.
No peanut butter cookies, unfortunately.
Yes. Yeah, no, the idea for this one, and I apologize if I was not clear on that, but this one was more of just a chit-chat, get-together, and see what you've been up to since the last time we talked, and you know, if you had anything that you wanted to promote, you could do so, kind of thing. No, we
Gush.
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 Brian and I made Gush. Okay. It's our most polished professional movie so far.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of people really like it. I don't dislike it. It's not one of my favorites. It doesn't speak to me the way some of our other stuff does, but I really like the way that it's connecting with other people in the audiences. I got to see it at a film festival.
Nice.
And a lot of people did really like it.
Awesome. It's a lot less like campy than I expected.
It's not very campy at all.
Lesbian bloody vampires. Like, all right, this is going to be like Space Babes in Outer Space, but with blood and tits and vampires. No, it's actually...
Not this time.
It's actually good.
It's a drama. You say wistfully.
Yeah. It's on Fandango now and Tubi and maybe some other places, but Tubi's the best place to watch it, I think. So check it out on Tubi for free.
Okay. I don't know. It's not a bad idea. Stream it on Discord.
Less than a minute.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Yeah, no, this one was more because Chris and I talked about it, and we'd like to have former guests come back to basically shoot the shit. And that format did not really lend itself to doing that. You know, once you've gone through it, there's really no reason to do that twice. Mm-hmm. So, and
yeah,
also,
yeah.
So cool. Well, it's been fun chatting with you. If you want to come back on and have another chat, let us know. We'll be doing this.